Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now, a presentation on the Mental Health News Radio Network. The Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
Ryan, that is a freaking awesome question.
You are the power, and you do not need anybody's permission.
He's the only guy that ever crawled out of a grave where people didn't go, oh, ah!
Don't worry, don't be afraid, ever,
because this is just a ride.
You're a great interviewer. You're one of the best.
If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed.
It is a great honor once again to welcome back to our show beloved guest, trends forecaster. He's a visionary. You go to his blog every day, Martin Armstrong. You can go to Martin's site, armstrongeconomics.com. Martin, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. First off, before we begin, we just want to bring to your attention that Martin is hosting the 2022 World Economic Conference. That's going to be in Orlando. It's going to be on November 11th, 12th, and 13th. And the WEC provides a rare glimpse into our financial futures, and it is the alternative to Davos. So this is one of the most heavily attended places to go to, and a lot of people call this the event of the year. You can learn more about it by going to armstrongeconomics.com and hope you'll attend. Well, Martin, I think this is pretty interesting because you and I are just two guys having a conversation right now, back and forth. But if we probably went into the mindsets of the people who are running things, they're planning a thermonuclear war. At least it seems like it. From your perspective, from what Socrates is saying, how close are we to a nuclear war? Is this something that is just all talk and just something designed to constrain and break Russia?
I think, unfortunately, I mean, in the 40 years career I've had of dealing with with governments, I've never seen a crop of world politicians as incompetent as we have today. We have a problem with the people, particularly in the Biden administration. They ascribe to a theory, no matter how much they want to deny it, of regime change. And it goes back to the idea, gee, if you had eliminated Hitler, you would have eliminated World War II. And that's very simplistic, very nice. However, there were other people right behind him as well. And in this case, that theory is highly dangerous. We had Biden come out and said, oh, for God's sakes, we got to get rid of Putin or whatever. And then the White House immediately came out, oh, we're not calling for regime change. But then that's really what they've been doing all along. So then they just had Zelensky stand up and says, well, we'll engage in peace talks when you overthrow Putin. These people have no clue at all about what is going on here. You had the head of Chechnya come out telling Putin, you know, you should nuke Ukraine. And, you know, Putin came out and said, we need a balanced approach. Putin is the moderate. Despite all the propaganda, when Yeltsin was in power, the oligarchs were blackmailing him to take over in July 99. And then you had the hardline communists filed an impeachment motion trying to remove him so they could establish the USSR. And Yeltsin turned to Putin because he wasn't an oligarch and he wasn't a communist. He stood in the middle. I have all the documents from the Clinton administration basically going over the whole thing. Everybody said, gee, nobody ever knew, you know, who Putin was. He wasn't a member of any party. So this nonsense that Putin is really the madman is totally absurd. You know, if you remove him, the hardliners are going to grab control. It's not going to be, you know, the, you know, oh, gee, you know, they always come up with these theories, and they use it in the Middle East.
That if we just take
Iraq, you know, Libya, you know, they tried it with Syria, that if we just eliminate the leader, like they're going to get a ticker tape parade and the people will rejoice and say thank you. It just has never, ever once happened like that. You know, you took out Saddam Hussein and we ended up with ISIS. I mean, he was all right, fine. Yes, he was a strong man, but he was also the guy that kept the religious zealots in check. Once you removed him, then they took power. And it's the same thing you're going to see. You know, God help us if Putin, you know, is overthrown, because I'm telling you, the hardline communists are there. And just as you saw from Chechnya saying, oh, you should just be nuking it, Ukraine. You know, the hardliners are the ones criticizing Putin, that he is too soft. He should have been more authoritative with Ukraine. And when you look at military strategy, when we went into Iraq, the first thing you do is you take out the power grid, you take out the communications, and then you go after the water supply. You're basically like in the Middle Ages, you know, staging a siege around a castle. You know, you cut off everything. And Putin has done none of that. He didn't take out the power grid. They still got communications. Zelensky's all over the world. And they still got the water. So the communists are saying he's been too soft, that he should have gone in and just taken that out. But Putin was trying to show that he only was there to take the, you know, to protect the Donbass. You know, he was telling the truth. He was not trying to conquer all of Ukraine. If he did, he did a very bad job of doing it. People don't understand that the Russian Empire of the Tsars went right up to the river that divides Ukraine. And Khrushchev, who started the whole Cuban Missile Crisis, that's where he grew up, in the Donbass. He was in charge of Kiev after World War II to rebuild it. Then he became the head of Russia. Okay, they finally removed him because he was like basically nuts, really. He, you know, for creating this 62 Cuban Missile Crisis. He was changing borders of not just Ukraine, but also other places. And so they removed him. Next came Brezhnev, also grew up and born there in the Donbass. And you take Stalin. Stalin was born in Georgia. So you have in Moscow, academics that debate, well, who's really Russian? You know, it's not everybody's been actually Russian other than maybe Lenin.
No, it's like you said, it just seems like they're pushing for that nuclear war. I mean, it's reckless. And we had a gentleman named Gary Heffen on our show a couple weeks ago, Martin, and he was saying, like he said, these leaders, they seem like they're really stupid. And said, but the reality is that according to him, he said, this is part of their evil plan. This is part of the Great Reset. And the utilizing stupidity as a way of, you know, pushing this through. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I seem like there's a lot of stupidity, but like, why, even if you were going to take over the world, even if you were part of, you know, saying, let's push this Great Reset, don't you want to have the world intact? Like, why would you even take a chance of risking a nuclear conflict? And you have this Italian prime minister that came out, and I think everyone was pretty happy, like, oh, God, you know, she's somebody who seems like she's for the people. And then within a day of her being elected, first thing she says is, oh, we fully support Ukraine. And it's like, isn't that exactly the reason why it's aggravating all the Russia right now? If Ukraine is fully initiated in NATO, does that start a nuclear war right away?
Pretty much, yes. You can also look, this has been entirely provoked. You can Google it, the Daily Wire. The day before Putin invaded on the 24th. On the 23rd, Zelensky stood up and said, Ukraine's going to seek nuclear weapons. All right. The whole, you know, the Minsk agreement was brokered by Germany and France. And after 2014 and the revolution there in Ukraine, what happened was the Donbass was also wanted separation from the Ukrainians. They went in and you can look at it, you know, they basically massacred any Russian speaking people there in Odessa. They set them on fire and burnt them alive. Yes. Look, I know people from both sides, from Donetsk as well as from Kiev. And one girl that worked for us from Kiev, very nice, very, you know, a passive person, etc., certainly not a warmonger. And when I asked her, I said, why doesn't you just give up the Donbass? I mean, they're Russians that live there anyhow. And her response was typically the propaganda that they get is that, oh, if we did that, then they would want the whole country. So it's, we're at an impasse here, and there's been so much propaganda. And I fear that the U.S. thinks that they can just take over Russia. You know, they blew up the pipeline. I think that's pretty much
It seems like pretty obvious
at this point. There's another think tank that has been advising them. That I saw actually told them they should also take out the pipelines that go through Turkey. There's one that goes through the sea there called the Southern Stream. And this is like a medieval attack on Russia. It's to cut off all possible income to them. And they think then Russia will just simply collapse. But 50% of Russia's GDP is energy. So this also ties in with the Great Reset and the whole thing about, you know, climate change and all this nonsense. But they actually think they can take out Russia, then turn to China, and they can do this one at a time. And it's not going to work. North Korea just shot a missile off over Tokyo, and they blared sirens and everybody ran. I mean, it just showed that it wasn't shot down. They could take out Japan. And people have to understand that what the bombs that were at Hiroshima, what we have today, they're just a tenth of what is there. A tactical nuclear weapon is bigger than that. One missile, just 100 megaton missile that would get through to England wipes out the entire island.
Jeez. Then does Socrates see anything? Do you see, does Socrates say anything in 2023 or 2024 about something like this happening? Because there's
it's showing more of a global war, probably from 24 to 27 period.
Okay.
But it does not look, you know, nice and peaceful between here and there either. I'm very concerned more about what's happening in probably in January of 23. The Socrates is just, it's showing. I mean, if you look at our rays that it puts out, it puts all the time. 2023 looks like the Empire State Building compared to all the others.
Jeez.
We're going to see a combination of civil unrest as well as geopolitical problems. And the Biden administration is just, it's completely insane. That's all I could say. I mean, these people are the greatest threat to world peace. and they think that they can accomplish this and get to the climate change. And you know, there's not going to be a climate left to worry about. You know?
Well, I'm going to come back actually. Just one of the next questions is climate change, because you have in what appears to only be a communist state of California, that governor, not only did he push a bill that prevented doctors from speaking their own mind about what how patients should be treated, they have to follow the state protocol now, or the medical license can be stripped. But he also pushed a several green energy initiatives, where if you look at some of these other states, like they're going to ban gas cars by 2030. They're doing it in New York. And I'm wondering, is that something that is going to escalate throughout the U.S.? And if so, what is it? What do you see that happening? Are there any states you think are going to resist that? Because it just seems like it's a total disaster. I mean, my particular state, they're pushing for this green energy. I'm like, well, you know, green energy is not comparable to fossil fuels. And there's a 2009 film, Martin, I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Collapse, and it featured a gentleman named Michael Rupert. And he was talking about the possibility that the world was going to run out of oil. My understanding is that that's not going to happen, but he talked about how dependent the world was on oil. And once you get rid of that, you have nothing else to fall back on, and green energy cannot even compare. So just coming back to the question, do you think that green energy psychosis is going to spread throughout the United States? And do you think that there are other states that are going to completely resist it?
Well, there definitely will be states that do resist it. Hopefully Florida will be one of them. But I mean, all the real independent studies show the power grid, it would not handle this. It would have to be at least 10 times, you know, larger. Then you also have to understand, I mean, they just entered a bill to impose digital IDs on all Americans. All that sounds very nice. However, just as I said in what you do in war, the first thing you do is you take out the power grid. Second, you go after communications. And third, you go after the water. This is standard military practice. All right. We did this to Iraq. This is how we go in the countries. This time you're talking about, if you take out the power grid and we only have digital currency and your car only works on a, what do we have? People will starve. I mean, you can basically take down the entire country this way. It's insane.
Are they going to pull it off? Because it seems like in Germany right now, their utility bills are up by 2,000%. In Europe, they're gathering firewood and looking for firewood online because they know what's coming. So I just wonder if that's going to come here, if we're going to face it in the U.S. and if we're going to capitulate to that.
Move south. That's all I can tell you. But
so then say it's,
you know, maybe we just swap places. All the Mexicans can come up here across the border and we go down. Say, okay, that's a fair trade, you know.
Yeah. Hey, they're willing to work. I mean, people in Mexico credit. At least they're willing to work. A lot of people in the U.S. don't want to work.
The Mexicans are the strongest work ethic and family values than certainly a lot of other countries. I think it's just totally insane. I mean, I don't know if they're just living a fantasy life there in Washington or what, but they only listen to things they want to hear. And so when you do research in that manner, it's not research, it's propaganda.
Okay. I agree with you. It's a little crazy. As somebody who, you know, studies the market, I believe one of your quotes you've talked about before, that you can gauge a lot of world events based on economic activity, based on where people are following the money. And just from your perspective, where do you think people will look to invest, and where do you see economic activity going in the next 5 years? And based on that assessment, where do you think the world's going to change? Do you think that, is there specifically a huge demand for clean energy? Is there a demand for a return to traditional values in the sense where you have localized production? Like, where do you see a lot of economic activity moving to?
Well, this is why the dollar is going up. I mean, you've had all these people out there like the gold bugs and saying, oh, dollar is going to crash. And, you know, it's been exactly the opposite. They don't understand history or capital flows even. The United States was bankrupt in 1896. It was World War I and World War II that sent all the money from Europe here. When there's tanks running down the street blowing up buildings, are you going to leave your money there in a bank? They put it on every boat and plane they could possibly get it over here. So at the end of World War II, we had 76% of the world gold reserves. That's why the US dollar became the reserve currency. All right. And we were bankrupt in 1896. So you're talking basically about 50 years. We went from nothing to the world leader. And I see basically this is why the dollar's been going up, and people don't understand this yet. But I mean, we have offices around the world, and I can tell you that clients outside the United States are in a state of panic. Asia, you know, I ended up with four phone calls already this morning from because of the missile going over Tokyo. Mm-hmm. You go to Europe and it's the same thing. People are fleeing. You're seeing a lot of people fleeing to South America from Germany in particular. And they've just had it. They don't see any hope here. All their leaders are equally insane. It's just nuts. But the backdrop to this and why Klaus Schwab is what he's been doing, and his slogan, you own nothing and be happy. What that really is that the governments have been borrowing since World War II every year. With zero intention of ever paying anything back. They run a deficit, we just borrow. Another deficit, we just borrow. And so that system is coming to an end. And that's really more what this is about. And they do kind of need war. And their idea is that the war is the excuse for another debt default, as took place in 1931. I mean, you can buy their bonds, Europe defaulted, South America defaulted, and even China defaulted. You can buy their bonds on eBay. They look very nice if you frame them up, you know, very authoritarian. But so 1931 just was a major sovereign debt crisis. And they started over after that. And now this is what they're expecting to do this time, that if they can just create some sort of war and think it can be contained, all right, to conventional, then that will be the excuse to default again. And they know they need some sort of an excuse, because if they defaulted on the bonds, basically all your pension funds in Europe are mandated by law, they have to have 70%, some up to 90% of government bonds. So you're wiping out everybody's pensions. You'll have millions of people down there with their pitchforks and torches of fire heading towards the parliament. You know, they know that. So they're not stupid in that sense. But I think they're trying to get some sort of a war so they can pull that off. And then their idea is to go to some sort of digital currency with this one world government that Soros is pushing as well.
I think Jim Rickards was talking about that too. He was talking about the digital dollar and stuff like that.
Their view, and like I said, I've been dealing with governments for 40 years. There are no mirrors in any government. They look at it as we're always the problem. They wouldn't have a deficit if we paid really what we owed. And their view is you find a $10 bill in the parking lot, where's our $5? You cheated us. You know, that's their view. If you look at the current tax code, look at it carefully. If you sell, you got a bike, you pay $200 for it, you put it on eBay, you're going to sell it for $100. They want income tax off that $100. This is why they needed 87,000 agents. There are only 664 billionaires in the United States. Why you need 87,000 agents armed? It's because they're going after all this stuff. If you sell, you know, an old bedroom set, hey, where's, you know, you've already paid taxes on the money to buy that to begin with. Mm-hmm. But now you convert that to money and they want taxes again.
Is this part of the civil unrest that you see in 2023 and 2024 as far as Socrates goes? Because I wonder if that's going to be a big part of it at this point, because people are going to be seeing this on a regular basis. I wonder if that's going to finally provoke people.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know somebody was just audited. They demanded, the state demanded all his records, basically, to see if he paid sales tax when he bought something from Amazon.
Jeez, that's insane. It's just getting more and more tyrannical. I just am surprised at how long people are able to hold this up, that they're not willing to push back, especially in Germany and these other European countries that are basically being decimated and they're not being allowed to live. You know, I want to bring to everyone's attention that aside, when you go to armstrongeconomics.com, I highly recommend going through Martin's archives and reading the historical articles. I think a lot of your archive blogs are very fascinating. And one of the articles I came across was about a book called 1777 BC, The Collapse of Society. And in there, you stated that there's about 8 civilizations that collapsed, the exception of post-Egypt, which is 1250 BC. And the one thing you pointed out that was all in common was that there was a major shift in climate that led to droughts or widespread famine, which collapsed civilizations. We recently have had on our program, Martin, a gentleman named Dane Wigginton. He's the founder of the Geoengineering Watch. And he says that we have about less than 2 years before we experience a planetary catastrophe as a direct result of geoengineering and solar radiation management programs. Based on that prediction, do you see, or does Socrates see, any major economic disaster or a societal collapse in the next 5 years, eerily similar to that which would involve a planetary collapse of the ecosystem?
Well, I would say that we're going to see the collapse of governments as we know them. All right. But that's after 2032. All right. So republics are historically the worst form of government you can get, because they're susceptible to corruption. Somebody can go down there and just bribe some congressman, say, here, I'll give you this and you do this or whatever. I mean, even John McCain was caught, you know, basically voting on things for sex. That's just the way it is. All right. I'm more in favor of a real democracy where the people basically would vote. And we certainly could do that. If we can buy from Amazon online, why can't we vote? All right. But they stick up these like a tax bills and stuff like that. I was in Australia and they always lie. They said, oh, we're going to put in the luxury tax. And the slogan was that they were going to tax their Ferraris, their fur coats, and their French wine. Everybody cheered. You know, I saw maybe 3 Ferraris in Sydney because they were already 100% taxed to get in anyhow. The only place I ever saw fur coats was down in Melbourne, where it was cold enough to wear. And nobody ever gave me any French wine. It was always Australian. But everybody cheered. Yeah, go get them. Well, what was in it? All electrical products. You bought a radio, a phone, a refrigerator. Suddenly that was a luxury tax, you know? This is the way it is. They called it like the Clean Water Act, and everything under the sun is in there. It's got nothing to do with water. That's why I'm more in favor of a direct democracy, that each bill has to be for what it actually is. And you can't stick these amendments on it that nobody's going to look at. But I would say society, you know, we're going to end up with a completely different form of government after 2032, because what is happening now is just insane. you know, Biden's supposedly won 51.3% of the vote. So even assuming that's true, 1.3% is not a mandate to basically screw the other 50%. But this is what politics has become. It's so adversarial. It's insane. They're, you know, civilization forms because it's collectively everybody benefits by coming together. And when you do this, it is what Plato warned about democracy, that the majority then get to oppress the minority. And that's why Plato and Socrates were actually against democracy.
So James Madison and Alexander Hamilton and John Adams were all against democracy too.
Yeah, it's, you know, it, but they were, they let, read basically the propaganda of fake news of Cicero from back then. And it was Cicero and Cato that were actually the optimists who were really the, you know, like the oligarchs basically. But that's another story. But I think you have this real problem. And, you know, you can't run a country and simply say, okay, I got 51.3%. So now let's screw everybody that voted against us. That is not the way civilization is supposed to function. I think that anything you do of this nature should require a two-thirds vote, period.
Why should it require a two-thirds vote? I didn't understand why anyone would have to do anything without their consent. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, what is the, in all the governments that you've explored and all the periods of history that you've explored, what is the best period of time and best representative or government types of government that truly represented the rights of the individual?
The best form of government I ever saw was that of Genoa.
Okay.
Now, the head of state, it was run by all the top rich families. However, the Doge, or like their president, was for 1 year. And it would rotate around the families. So consequently, they would never enact something that was then going to apply to them the very next year. And it was run more like a corporation, whereas Genoa versus Florence versus Venice, rather than, you know, oh, let's get this group within our own, you know, borders and attack them. And you know, it was run more as a competitive corporation against other cities. And the fact that it rotated so was actually a very good idea, because nobody's going to put in some law that's going to apply to them the very next year. That's why career politicians are so dangerous, because it never applies to them. And you get a lot of people that put out, they just argue with labels, you know, calling like Trump fascist. You know, do we even understand what a fascist is?
No, they have no idea what a fascist is.
No, they don't. It's fascist is the government controls all the corporations. I don't think Trump was going to hand all his companies to the government. But they throw out these labels and it's saying, oh, yeah, he's this. I mean, it, you know. Do you even understand what the heck?
No, they have no idea what it is. They're just throwing out things. It's very Orwellian.
They started immediately calling the new prime minister of Italy. Oh, she's a fascist. Just complete nuts. But, you know, you'd have to seize all the private companies and then they control it and then they will be dictated. I mean, not going to happen.
I just wonder why you mentioned 2032. I always wonder why it's going to take that long for things to happen when, you know, information ideas can be shared relatively quickly and people can get mobilized relatively quickly. So I wonder why will it take till 2032 for something like this happens. And just as another question on top of that is 2032 happens, do you see a massive decentralization where we're going to have certain individual towns and counties within states, U.S. states or countries that decide to govern themselves in a particular way that do not wish to have any outside interference that are like militarily equipped to protect themselves.
Yes. I mean, look, that's how Rome fell. Okay. And we will follow the same path. Once the central government really lost the ability to control and protect the people, then it starts separating. So Rome actually, you know, broke apart and was the Gallic Empire, which was basically France, and Spain was part of it for a brief period, and Britain. And in the east, you had Zenobia, which they make the Queen Zenobia, who they make a lot of videos of for like a superhero or something. But she basically broke off and took like Syria all the way over to Egypt. So we will see that here. And what the Biden administration has done is basically polarize the country. So you see the South, like Texas and Florida, and is against the North. It's the same thing. Although, you know, they like to project that the Civil War was all about slavery. That's not true. It was more or less about states' rights. The only people that really could afford the slaves were the rich, right? So why did all these guys join the army and fight? Were they fighting for the rich? No, they were basically fighting because they didn't want to be told what to do from Washington. And that was the battle going back between Jefferson and Adams. I mean, even... You have, that was the compromise that that Jefferson said, okay, fine, he would agree, but he wanted the capital removed from New York, and then they created Washington, D.C. The same thing, it should straddle the South versus the North and not just be the North. So, you know, there's always been this regional resentment, and that was a deal cut because Alexander Hamilton wanted to create a national debt and Jefferson was against it. So that the compromise was the capital moved and all right, I'll let you have a debt, but it has to be paid off. And he did pay it off and by 1820. And then there was a brief period where the U.S. didn't have any national debt and they started up again.
Well, they could be around today.
Yeah. It is. So this battle between the North and the South has always existed, and it's been more on states' rights. That's what Jefferson, Patrick Henry was all about. It was not to be dictated to from a central power as the king would. So that states' rights, we still hear about it, you know, once in a while, but that is why you'll see probably the U.S. split. Because, you know, you have these draconian rules, and when people begin to see why they needed 87,000 IRS agents, because they're coming to see what you sold on eBay and what you bought from Amazon, you know, people are going to start seeing they've been lied to again.
I can see DeSantis moving away right away. I mean, you have that governor, DeSantis, he seems like I would say Florida probably the first state that would do something like this. It seems like that the people are completely behind it.
He's, I would say, I would have a little bit more faith in him. He seems to be on point from that. I had, you know, the political side in Washington's trying to get me back into advising them again. And I said, look, I don't want to really get involved. But they actually asked me if I would go meet with Trump to talk him out of running in 24. And would I then, they wanted me to go meet DeSantis, which I did. I flew over to go meet him. And they wanted me to advise DeSantis. And they said, oh, well, he will make a better administrator. And I told him, I said, I don't want to get involved. I said, because if DeSantis goes to Washington, you people are going to eat him for lunch the same as you did to Trump. Trump's biggest problem was he really didn't know Washington as well as he thought he did. And I used to go around and meet people who wanted to run for president. I was part of the vetting process. So I'd go meet, you know, like Ross Perot and the head of the governor of Oklahoma and things of this nature. And I was asked to go to Texas to meet George Bush Jr. And I was told, oh, this one's different. I said, what's different? Oh, he's really stupid. And I said, what? Now, you have to understand, all the years before, it was like, do you think he's smart enough to handle, you know, handle this? And then all of a sudden, we went from that to, well, this one's really stupid. And I asked, I said, why would you make somebody stupid? This is completely opposite of what we were all about to begin with. And they said, well, he's got the name. And so they picked Cheney. They picked everybody to put around it. I was actually asked if I would work in the White House and take chief economic advisor. And I said, no, I'm sorry. I'm not giving up my company for 2 years over here. That's, I'm not doing it. And so that's what happened when Trump went. They picked the cabinet. They said, oh, you don't really know. To get confidence, we need people with experience. They put, you know, blanked in everybody in. And what'd they do? They, every one of them stabbed them in the back.
Yeah.
And that's the way they control things. The people that are there are the bureaucrats that never leave. All right. So, you know, that's the problem. They're not elected. They're just effectively, you know, junior dictators. And right. I mean, you look at your Secretary of State over there. He's not the brightest guy, you know, bulb in the box, as they say. They blew up the pipeline on Monday. On Friday, he said, oh, this is an extraordinary opportunity, you know. To cut off Russia's, you know, energy. I mean, this is what they do. And, you know, when Biden came out and said, oh, for God's sakes, we got to get rid of this guy. Then the White House the next day comes out. Oh, well, no, we're not actually supporting regime change when they are. And you have Zelensky stand up and saying, I'm not going to negotiate until you get rid of Putin. It's all about regime change.
I just think that they're pushing for this thing. It's so hard, and I feel awful because I personally don't have a problem with anyone in Russia. I don't have a problem with anyone else throughout the world. I want to be friends with anyone, but the people that are behind the scenes, that are powers who shouldn't be there, they're pushing us to these horrible disasters. And for what? For what purpose? So they can push this great reset. It's just awful. But it's just sick.
Schwab's idea, Schwab is a communist. He's an academic. Okay, so, and the problem with an academic is they have no real world experience. And they just sit around, they drink in their port in a nice 5-star hotel lobby. And oh, yeah, that's it. Yes, we should do that. I agree. They're armchair generals, you know, and they have no problem. Oh, yeah, we should go over there and wipe out Russia. Well, why don't you go over, pick up a gun, and get in the front line?
Yeah, you do it.
You know, they want somebody else's son. And I will say this about Trump. I went to go, I was invited down to Mar-a-Lago for a dinner there. This was, I think, was in March 2020. And it was the first time I ever heard a head of state ever talk about the people who die on the battlefield. He said he wanted to take the troops out of Afghanistan. And he said he was tired of writing letters to people to say, oh, your son died as a hero for his country, blah, 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 whatever. And he said, what are we fighting for? You know, they've been fighting over borders for 1,000 years. What difference are we going to make? And I have met so many heads of state. Never have I ever heard anybody once be remorseful for the people that die in battle.
That's really awesome.
We're just pawns to them. And, you know, on a chessboard, that's it. Put a couple pawns out, sacrifice them so I get the bishop. You know, I mean, that's basically what this is about. And they are people who play with our lives. They've never had any real world experience, and it's all just academics.
Yeah, well, I hope they get their consequences one day. I wonder that. I really hope that Socrates, Socrates has a report that says there's going to be Nuremberg too, where these people actually, you know, face the consequences of their actions. Because,
well, they only do the research that supports their idea. All right, and that's the problem. Marxism succeeded only because Russia was the last to get rid of serfdom in the 1860s. All right, they got rid of serfdom when we had our civil war and ended slavery. So the people, a serf is different than a slave. A slave, you could sell that individual, you know, back and forth to somebody else. Serfdom, you were tied to the land. So if you sold the farm, that included the serfs, that they were the workforce. So you couldn't take one individual serf and sell him. So that's the difference between the two systems. So when serfdom ended, these people own nothing. Okay, so Marxism at least sounded applicable at that. Let's go get the rich. They have everything. Yeah, let's go. So it was a different situation. Today, you have Schwab, who's still a Marxist. Oh, you'll be happy. All right. No, you will not.
You'll be very upset when you have nothing.
Yeah, and he doesn't understand. Today, you have a home, you have a car, you have a job. You're going to give all that up and to say, okay, fine, standing line. Okay, then we got an opening here for a broom sweeper. Here's your broom. Go over there. That's what communism was.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I just understand. That's what it really comes down to. A gentleman I talked to, his name is Larkin Rose. He says that there's no reason a human being should have any authority over another person. I mean, if you live your life, don't harm another people. I just don't understand why we just can't live by that. But powers that shouldn't be one allows to happen.
I don't know. I think I've come to a conclusion that there's something that happens when these people get too much money. And people like Gates and Soros, et cetera, people have no concept what $1 billion really is. You cannot spend it. All right. So you see some of these, you know, fancy houses and a yacht, $150 million for a yacht. Mm. All right. You can buy a yacht, three of these houses, you still haven't spent $1 billion. All right. So when you're talking about $5-6 billion that some of these people are worth, they could never spend it. It can't even be you can't even leave it to your children. They couldn't spend it. All right. So what do you do with it? It's power. You cross a certain quantity of money and it goes from wealth to power. What can I do with it? All right. So that's why you see somebody like Soros, I'll use my money to make a one world government. You know, they come up with these crazy things, or Bill Gates with his, digital passports.
And he wants to modify the corn too. He's doing these creepy corn commercials that are probably going to have the vaccine in them or something.
It's, you know, they get this kind of money and they just, I think they go insane. Actually, because you can't spend it. And then people just look at it, they just want to get more money. It's not that sense, okay? It's not like, I'll go buy another color TV. This is power at that stage. And what can I do to screw up the world? But they think they're saving it.
Well, the elites are screwing up the world, but Martin Armstrong is providing a wonderful advice on how to protect the world and protect yourself. Martin, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Get you a little more about Martin by going to his website at armstrongeconomics.com. And a friendly reminder that the 2022 World Economic Conference is going to take place in Orlando for November 11th, 12th, and 13th. You can go to armstrongeconomics.com, sign up for it. A lot of people are saying it is the event you do not want to miss. Martin will be there. You'll be in the midst of a lot of other great people who are very forward-thinking when it comes to economics, and you'll probably learn a lot. So, Martin, thank you again so much for being with us and for sharing your time, wisdom, and hope for humanity.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our unbelievable guest, and special thanks as always to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Constance Dallas, and our associate producer, Jenny Lamisa. To learn more about the Out of Limits of Inner Truth, please go to our website at outoflimitsradio.com. And till the next time we meet, my friends, I wish upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beers. Take good care, and thank you so much for listening.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.